your source for everything paranormal. Para-X. The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual host and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para-X, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
Metaphysical, paranormal, you know, all those things you've been wondering about. Are you ready to go deeper into the realms of the unknown? I hope you've got your walking shoes on, because life is an adventure, and this is the journey. Come on, let's go. And welcome to the show, everyone. I'm Jen Cruz, and I'm your host tonight, and this is the Journey Radio Show. So this is our very first episode, so welcome to the show. And tonight, I have a very special guest, and I'm so excited to have him on. I met him at the Kansas City Paracon when I was down there with the She Squatchers, and he was the one and only little bit of a presentation that somebody else was giving that I got to see. But I was so fascinated, and I just want to welcome Brandon Callahan onto the show. Hi, Brandon.
Hey, Jen. How's it going?
Good, good.
Good. Hey, everybody.
So glad you could join me tonight, and you're my very special guest tonight. It's my very first episode of doing the show as The Journey.
I know. That's pretty exciting. Very cool.
Yeah, yeah. So, I've been just aching to ask you about this ever since I met you at the Paracon in Kansas City.
Yeah.
I came in on your presentation, and I didn't get to hear the whole story about, but what caught my ear right off the bat was when you said you saw something changing size and shape and cloaking. And I went, because I have been... as the listeners know, I do Bigfoot research with the She Squatchers, and you can check us out at shesquatchers.com. But I've been saying, I wonder if they can change their size or shape, if they're a shapeshifter, and if they could cloak similar to like the Predator movie. And I've been saying that for months and months now. Yeah. That I've been wondering if they could. And so when you said the things that you said, I was like, I need to talk to that guy right there.
Yeah, it was an experience. I mean, it was, I've been to a lot of places and experienced a lot of things over the years. It's been almost 12 years now. I've been out in the field, and that was right up there toward the top. To this day, I can't entirely wrap my mind around it. It was a pretty mind-blowing experience. Yeah, so certainly I'd be more than happy to kind of tell you about that little tidbit. I had been working on a project down in Tahlequah, Oklahoma for on and off for 7 years. I was working on a book project. Initially it was just kind of a road trip project with a buddy of mine, and that place really like immediately dug its hooks in, and I do a lot of ley line research, and that's what originally kind of pointed me in the direction down there toward Tahlequah. And it's just a hot spot, the whole area. There's a number of intersecting ley lines right in that area, and so that's where I kind of started my research. And and then come to find out that that's also where the Trail of Tears ended. And so a lot of things really started kind of adding up for me. And so I got in touch with the Cherokee Nation down there, and they put me in touch with a couple of gentlemen that had some private property off the reservation. And they invited us down, and we started going down there and really didn't stop. We had a pretty amazing experience over the years, and that was just one of the things. It actually took place at a nearby cemetery, just off the property, that we had frequented several times just due to a lot of the local stories about how active it was and everything else. So, and sure enough, every time we had gone there, it was very active. A lot of activity, just that kind of off the wall stuff. But anyway, it was right around dusk. It was, sun was going down, and we were in this little cemetery, and it's surrounded by these really thick woods. And I was just doing an EVP session, and the guy I was with, he was kind of along the back fence line of the cemetery, just doing some filming. A few minutes prior, we had actually seen a shadow figure kind of dart behind one of the trees where he had kind of gone to investigate, which was pretty common around there. We'd see them all the time, these just blacker than black shadow figures just bolting from, you know, one spot to the other. And so he was checking that out, and all of a sudden I heard just like a crashing through the leaves coming through the woods toward me at the back corner of the cemetery. And it was so loud, it was almost like this miniature train just plowing through the leaves. And, you know, typically when you hear something in the woods and you're trying to spot what you're hearing, a lot of times you have to kind of survey, you know, you have to kind of look around to spot what it is you're looking for. This time was very different. I looked right at this thing, and it looked like a man kind of leaning up against a tree. And so, of course, you know, with the locals, not always super fond of outsiders and strangers, I just tried to kind of talk to who it was. Just kind of calling out a little bit, like, hey, you know, how's it going? Just trying to get a little bit of a better gauge of the situation. But I felt really uncomfortable for some reason, and I didn't get a response. And after about, several tries, you know, within about 45 seconds or so, what looked like this man, and, you know, I wasn't seeing a lot of, like, facial details or anything like that. It just kind of looked like a guy leaning up against a tree, almost like looking down. It looked like he had a hat on. It looked like he had overalls on, but I couldn't see any facial features at all. So anyway, the figure kind of pivoted toward me, and right as it did, it went from what looked like a human type figure to it morphed into something that had an outline of mostly human. I could say broad shoulders and a big head, but it looked as though it was made of mirrors. And that's the part that I always describe as the only thing I can think of that's comparable is when you see the movie Predator, and when the Predator is actually cloaked and it's actually in this stealth mode, it looks like it's kind of made of mirrors. And that's what this did. And then all of a sudden it started growing and kind of pushing up forward toward me, and it pushed its way through these two trees. One of the trees kind of swayed in a direction because it brushed up against it, and it stood so big that I was about probably 70-75 feet away from it, but it was so just dynamic. And it brushed up through these trees, and then it just kind of stood, and it locked onto me. I couldn't see eyes. I couldn't see eyes, but I could tell that I was almost like hypnotically possessed by these eyes, where the eyes would be. I couldn't move, and I could barely speak. I had a camera rolling and a bunch of audio rolling, and I didn't know really what to do. So I sent Jan, the buddy that I was with, I sent him toward it. I said, you got to walk toward this corner. Well, I was completely frozen. Oh yeah,
this is your buddy.
Right. Oh yeah. Well, yeah, someone had to do it, and I was just frozen. I'm locked onto this thing, and the weird thing was, it started kind of doing this like very steady swaying back and forth, like, and it was hypnotic. And so anyway, he keeps walking over there, and when we reviewed his audio from his camera, he started complaining that his eyes started watering for no reason at all. And so he couldn't see anything, really. He probably got within 10 feet of this thing, and he never saw it. And this lasted for about 3 minutes, and it just kind of kept swaying back and forth. And I don't know if I felt more threatened or warned in a way, but eventually what it did is it kind of just rolled up and then just bolted away back through the woods just as it came, like just kind of stormed through the leaves back through the woods, and it was just gone. But like I said, this whole event was about a 3-minute experience, which in my experience is unheard of. Like anytime you see these weird occurrences and things, almost always they're like in the blink of an eye, you know, so fast that your mind barely is able to register what happened a lot of times. This was very different. I mean, to this day, I try to wrap my mind around it. I don't know what it was. The thing is that throughout my time down there, I had kind of developed my own theory because, truth be told, I had never done a lot of research on Bigfoot. But when you go down to this area, you're going to hear stories about shapeshifters and skinwalkers and Bigfoot and aliens and little people. I mean, the list goes on forever. It's incredible. And the more we went down there, we started thinking we're experiencing a lot of these things, and it was just completely mind-blowing. And so anyway, I kept catching on my audio. When we come back and review, I wasn't hearing it real time, but almost every time we went down there, at least once or twice a night, we were catching these sounds that are like very stereotypical Bigfoot howling growls. They were really loud. No question about it, we should have heard it with our own ears, but we never did. It was more like an EVP, which kind of got my theories working to where I feel like I approach the idea of Bigfoot a lot differently than most. And, you know, surely you've got a lot more experience than I do actually seeking out this creature. But, I mean, I've come to the opinion that for me, if something like that does exist, I'm almost of the opinion that we're talking more like an interdimensional being. I guess I have a hard time wrapping my mind around this big hairy creature out in the woods just living there. But I guess my mind is a little bit more, I guess, torn toward, is this something that can just seriously just kind of come and go? And, you know, when we're catching these sounds by way of EVP, it almost seems like it's on a different frequency of communication. But we also caught a few things that we could hear with our ears. And so it's just this very strange thing. And to this day, I don't know. I've had a lot of people tell me you saw a Bigfoot. And I've also had a lot of people tell me you saw a shapeshifter. And frankly, I don't know what I saw. I don't claim to have ever seen anything that would fit the scope of your typical Bigfoot picture, this big hairy creature. I've never seen anything like that. And so I don't know what to describe. I will say this, though, when we took measurements of where this creature was, one of my buddies was with me, and he stands 6'5", and his wingspan couldn't touch these two trees apart. But this thing brushed up between them. And without stretched arms. I mean, this was shoulder to shoulder, brushed through these trees that were about 9 feet apart. I don't know how it happened. It was this morphing thing. And when it ended up standing, it was standing like 10, 11 feet tall. And so.
So how big was it when it started and it before it started to grow?
I would guess between 6 and 7 feet. Come to find out, it didn't look that tall to me just from where I was, because I think I was so far away. But when I got closer to exactly where it was, the whole scope of it is part of what really blew my mind, because the figure was pretty tall. But in my angle and my eyesight at the time, I was thinking, 6 foot. But when I was really thinking about it from how far away I was, it had to be closer to 7 feet.
Okay. And then it grew to be 13 or bigger?
Probably, yeah. It had to. I mean, shoulder width was brushing between trees that were like 8 to 9 feet apart. And so, I mean, just physically, it's not possible, you know? But this is what I saw. I saw one of these trees move, and then I saw this other tree kind of blended with these mirrors. You know, like the shoulder part of these mirrors kind of morphed the tree a little bit as I was looking, because it was solid. I wasn't looking through it. I was looking at just these almost stealth-like mirrors. It was crazy. And actually, within the next minute or two, when we reviewed the audio after the whole thing happened, we caught that howling, growling sound I believe it was three times within 2 minutes. And so that, you know, again, kind of bent me toward, well, did I just see some variation of a Bigfoot? Because like I said, stereotypically by the sound, that's kind of what it sounded like. It's like this animalistic howl and growl at the same time. So I don't know what I saw. It was one of the craziest things I've ever seen in my life. I still don't understand it. It bugs me all the time, but I saw it once and I have never seen it again.
How close did your buddy get to this thing?
About 10 feet. And yeah, he never saw anything. And
did it come up on any of your cameras or?
Well, that's the thing. It was this perfectly timed deal where we were, the sun was going down. We were facing west. The sun was going down. So beyond the woods, you could see the glow in the sky, but the woods was dark, and where we were was getting dark real quick. And so night shot wasn't working. Day shot wasn't working. It was almost as though the timing of this thing was as such. It was completely invisible. We had no way of catching it on camera. The cameras were pointed right at it, zoomed in as far as we could. I mean, and this thing was there, physical and moving, and we couldn't pick it up. It was almost as though it was set in place to be that way. And so that obviously infuriated me beyond words. But, you know, the experience in and of itself, you know, and that's the thing. That's why I go out and do this, because if somebody else was telling me this story, I'd say, okay, you know, cool story. But for me, I am a very skeptical person, and I am the type of person that I need to see it, feel it, hear it, touch it before I completely buy into it. And you know, just being there and experiencing it, that really did it for me. I mean, just as far as that experience, I know I wasn't delusional. I wasn't on drugs. I wasn't drinking nothing. And it was just there. And it was just this experience. And again, it lasted so much longer than any other experience I've ever had. It was this long stretch. I mean, the 3 minutes felt like an hour, you know?
Right. I understand how that goes with those moments that just seem to stretch out forever, because it just goes into almost slow motion.
Right.
And you're really taking it all in. So I've got, of course, questions just pouring in from different listeners in the chat room and via my Facebook Messenger. The one person is asking, your buddy is 10 feet away. Did he smell anything?
Not that he said, no. That's a good question, because a lot of times down there, we would catch, we would kind of run into these random, like, sulfuric type smells. But not in that instance, no. It was the approach and the retreat were just unmistakable, you know, so obvious and so forceful. But everything else was just very subtle. Like I said, we caught some things on the audio. Vaguely on one of my recorders, you can hear it approaching. You can kind of hear the leaves rustling. It was a lot louder when we were standing there, but no, we didn't, nothing smelled out of the ordinary. It was kind of just business as usual for the most part, other than the approach and the retreat. And of course what happened in between, but no, that's a good question. And we always try to take note of that, but nothing notable at all.
Well, and then I was just coming back from CryptidCon not that long ago down in Kentucky. That was an amazing convention, but I was talking with other Bigfoot researchers, and one of the things that they've said is that they don't always smell, and one of them, well, more than one, actually thought that perhaps it was a defense mechanism that they give off a scent to make you go away. But sure. If you're not a threat to them, if they don't feel threatened, they don't give off the scent. Mm-hmm. And that would make sense to me, too.
Well, see, and that's the thing. Part of what I've never been able to really completely grasp is, should I have felt threatened, or was it some sort of a warning? Was it some sort of whatever the communication was, I didn't catch any additional EVPs during the whole thing, which I was hoping maybe there was some sort of communication going on. But I didn't get anything other than the howling afterwards. And so it was almost like a psychic event for me because, by no stretch of the imagination do I claim to be psychic. I trust my gut, and a lot of times my gut feelings tend to lead me in the right direction, but I don't in any way feel like I can communicate with the other side, so to speak, but this, like I said, it felt like it had entranced me. Like it was just, we locked onto each other, and it was as though it was only going to let me go when it wanted to let me go. I wanted to approach slowly. I wasn't going to bolt right at this thing like you might see on TV or whatever. I would have been very cautious because I had no idea what the intentions were. I thought it was odd that it was on the outside of the fence line and stayed there. And you do hear a lot of stories about protectors and things of that nature, demons of sorts, elementals in and around cemeteries all the time. I've also wondered, was that kind of what I came into contact with? Was it some sort of a protector? Now, when we go to cemeteries, we never, ever provoke. We're always there as respectful as we can possibly be. But keeping in mind, down there in Native American territory, you are dealing with a force that most people just don't understand, because you're talking about extremely spiritual people, and even in some cases, practices and medicine and things of that nature that go back centuries, and even millennia. And so it didn't take me long to realize that down there, it's just this whole nother ball of wax. It's like this whole nother thing that without experience, you're going to quickly get experience, and you're going to have to figure out real fast if you are truly in this to do what you feel like you want to do, or if you need to just get away as fast as possible. Because some of the experiences that I had down there had me, without question, wondering if I had completely lost my mind to keep going back. And so there were some experiences that were absolutely life-changing, no question about it.
Wow. And so you said this is Native territory. Were you on an Indian reservation?
Nope. We were always on private property. And even that cemetery is technically on the brothers' property. We had to drive 10 minutes, but you're kind of going around, but if you were to walk, because the way that they've cut up the properties now, they used to own, following the Trail of Tears, their family was kind of given, I guess, about 300 plus acres, which over the years and generations has whittled down, and now they only own about 20. But so technically this cemetery was on that 300 acres. And so we could have walked it probably in about 15, 20 minutes, if that, it may be a mile, but you're talking about the Ozarks, it's hilly, it's thick, it's absolutely stunning. It's beautiful. You don't really think of Oklahoma, or at least I didn't think of Oklahoma as this just absolutely amazing, beautiful place. But in Northeast Oklahoma is just phenomenal. One of the best kept secrets. Northern Arkansas and Northeast Oklahoma, one of the best kept secrets in the entire country. No doubt about it.
Wow. Mm-hmm. And okay, so these ley lines that you were tracking, is this the place where they were crossing?
Oh, yeah. I mean, they were, when I narrowed, because what I try to do, I realize my reference point for my ley line research, it's not exact. And so that's why when I look at my reference point and I'm seeing these lines intersect, what I'm doing is I'm trying to get as close to the coordinates as I possibly can. So I'm going to document the coordinates, and then typically I'm going to look within, depending on how many lines are crossing, usually within about 25 to 30 square miles around these coordinates. I look for small towns, even big towns, if they happen to be there. But those are, that kind of leads me in the direction of places that I'm interested in, places that maybe I need to start asking questions. You know, what kind of unexplainable lore and you know, history and things of that nature. And it seems like it doesn't miss. I mean, it's an absolute. And so, when we went down there, that's what took me down there. And you've got these intersecting lines, and we were probably within 3 miles of the coordinates I had knocked down. And so, again, it's never going to be exact, but we were right there, and we were right at the center of this. And that's what really hooked me, I think, was just the first night that we were down there investigating was the most just expansive and active night that it's hard to say that it was the most active night I've ever experienced, but it was on so many different levels because of just the scope of things we experienced. I had been in houses before where there were nights that I thought I was not leaving alive. I mean, there was just nonstop activity to a level of something I've never even fathomed outside of a crazy Hollywood movie, but it was reality. But this place, it was so different. During the daytime, we had been on the property an hour, and my buddy saw a woman walking broad daylight, walked behind a tree, never came out the other side. And when we went to investigate it, there's a 50-foot cliff right there. There's no way anybody was walking right there.
Wow.
Well, and I mean, this is all just on the walkthrough of the land. That the house that we were going to investigate, one of the houses we were going to investigate, we were being told a story about how the house seems to try to get people out. And as we were being told that story, the living room floor collapsed as we were standing on it, and we dropped about 4 feet, and it just happened. And yeah, and that was the night. And I think I was kind of mentioning it to you before the show, even, that was the first night that I've ever seen anything that I would classify as a UFO. The first time in my life that I've seen anything in person that I would feel was a UFO. And having spent 5 years in the Air Force, I feel like I've got a pretty good idea of being able to identify things in the sky, what's normal, what's not. What we were looking at for about a 5-minute period was not. It was very high up in the sky, but its movements and its behavior was not normal. And so that was the first night that I could ever think that I would classify something that I saw as an unidentified flying object, because I could not identify what it was. So, I mean, these are just a few things. Within 2 minutes of everything starting, the investigation starting, I use an RT-EVP, which is, it has earbuds. It's an audio recorder, digital recorder, and I wear earbuds, and I get a real-time playback, and I put it on a 2-second delay. So if I ask a question, I get the feedback 2 seconds later. And within 5 minutes of us being in this house, I'm having my name whispered in my ear constantly, repeatedly. And sure enough, from where it was coming, I had a shadow figure basically come at me as though it was getting my attention by calling my name. And then when it finally got my attention, it came right at me. And I mean, this is just all on night one within the first few hours. And then all of a sudden, our walkie-talkies started going off on their own. And when I say going off, we had things talking to us through the walkie-talkies without us having even pushed the talk button out. We just kept them on our belt for safety reasons in case we split up, because there were only two of us. And sure enough, we started having children talking to us through them. We had something that I felt was potentially demonic talking to us through them. We had questions being answered. I didn't talk out through the walkie-talkie, but I asked the question. I said, can you talk to us through these walkie-talkies? And a voice came over the walkie-talkie immediately and said, yes, I can. And so it was just this night that you only think of. Maybe Hollywood could come up with it, but I don't even think Hollywood would have come up with that night. It was so out there. So anyway, needless to say, the place hooked us and hooked me really hard. before I knew it, it was more or less like a drug. Like, I was completely addicted to the place. It terrified me. It kept me up at night, but I couldn't stop going back. I didn't want to stop going back, but I dreaded going back. It was, yeah. And for 7 years, that's what was going on. And I dang near lost my mind over it too.
I can understand that. I feel that way about certain places as well. I just can't wait to get back there. But then I'm like, am I crazy
right.
for wanting to go back there?
Right. And totally to an extent, I think the answer is yes, we are a little bit crazy. But yeah, but it was just an amazing experience.
That's amazing. Well, we're at the half the hour already. It's flying by. So we're going to take a 2-minute break. We'll be right back, everybody.
I'm Jenna Valadez with The Basement Files. Tune in Friday nights, 6 p.m. Central, 7 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Para-X Radio Network.
Demons. Vampires. This and more. Sunday nights at midnight on the Staring Into the Abyss radio show. Come, get lost with us.
Good evening, paranormal lovers. My name is Ra, and I'm reporting from the subterranean lair of the Mystical Spiral Radio. If you're looking to listen to the best paranormal discussions this side of the Kuiper Belt, then tune in every Friday from 8 to 9 p.m. and awaken to the beauty of your own consciousness. That's Fridays, 8 p.m. Eastern. Let the Para-X Radio Network upgrade your gray matter. Spiral out.
Hi, this is Master Tarot Card Reader Ken Bogle, and I highly encourage you to tune in every Monday night to the Para-X Radio Network for the Para-Cave, hosted by Matt Gesso, as he goes in search of the truth in the supernatural, metaphysical, mystic, and paranormal. Monday nights, 8 p.m. Eastern, only on the Para-X Radio Network. I never miss it, and neither should you.
Back to the show, everybody. I'm Jen Cruz, and this is the Journey Radio Show. And tonight I have our guest, a very special guest, Brandon Callahan. Let me just tell you a quick thing about him. He's a paranormal investigator, an author, an aspiring filmmaker. He's founded multiple paranormal investigation teams, and he offers assistance to those in need and constantly seeks the truth. He is an author of a couple of books, one that I think the story that was in the last that he was just telling about is The House Where Evil Lurks, or no, I'm sorry, that's the previous one. The House Where Evil Lurks, A Paranormal Investigator's Most Frightening Encounter, and The Agony That Remains, A Paranormal Investigation in America's Heartland. Brandon shares his story, many, many stories of past investigations and life-changing occurrences. And he works to tell stories of the forgotten past that may still affect many lives today. And his methods veer off the common paths and offer a very unique perspective to the world of the paranormal. So, that being said, now you've been formally introduced. I was so excited to get right to the morphing, shape-changing, size-changing, predator cloaking.
Yeah. Well, you can read in much more detail in the book too. It's funny. I get on the subject, and I'll be honest, Jen. At some point, don't be surprised if we have like technical difficulties. It's very typical when I get too deep into talking about that particular story. I've had all kinds of weird things pop up. Certain subject matter, it seems like. But anyway, yeah, you can read all about that story and that first night that I was telling you about and many others. Like I said, it was about a 7-year project and took a lot of patience and a lot of hard work. I think it came out really well. It's a pretty cool story.
And that is The Agony That Remains.
Right. Right.
That's awesome. You can find that book on Amazon, everybody. I did just post the link to it in Amazon on the chat for the show. So check it out, everybody. I'm sure it's an awesome read.
Yep. And you can get Barnes & Noble anywhere, really. You can find it anywhere that sells books. And then the House Where Evil Lurks, that was kind of the maiden voyage, so to speak. And it kind of, you know, I talk about that active night down in Tahlequah, and I hesitate saying it was the most active night that I've ever experienced because of this other house that I hard to even talk about sometimes. But anyway, couple pretty cool stories. So I'm pretty proud of the work that everybody did. I mean, I've got a small but incredible group of people that I work really closely with, and I'm pretty lucky. So, I don't do a lot of the conventions and stuff like that. I do spend most of my time just doing this field work and research, and it's just kind of what I'm more passionate about doing. I love meeting people. I mean, I had a blast at the I always do the Kansas City show just because it's hometown, you know. So I have a blast, but I spend most of my time, and now I've got a couple other projects I'm working on right now. Really starting to put the pieces together on my first fiction work, which I'm really excited about. So that's a whole nother venture and intimidating thing that I'm trying to tackle. But sure enough, it'll be creepy too. So I found my niche. I like the creepy, unexplainable stuff. It's just what I do.
Yeah, that mm-hmm. sounds wonderful. That sounds wonderful. There was a couple of questions in the chat room about the. Mm-hmm. what you were talking about earlier. So I didn't want to interrupt you then, but I still want to get to those questions that people had. Sure. About the sounds, the EVP sounds of the howls that you picked up. Mm-hmm. Could that have been infrasound?
Anything's possible. I mean, when you're investigating outside, that's the thing. Outside investigations, as you clearly know, Jen, is... it's a tricky thing because you really have to work hard to distinguish what is absolute and what is not. And what I found when it came to these sounds, they're always consistent. They're always in different locations. The volume was different, but the actual tone and sound held its own. When I'm working in my Audacity program, it is its own sound wave. It's its own standalone data. And so, you know, anything is possible. I kind of preface usually a lot of my discussions and my writings and everything like that is, I love the fact that people have a healthy skepticism. I think it's extremely important, especially in this field of research. And I always do. I always try to tackle every single angle that I possibly can before I start saying that anything would be considered evidence. But to me, I felt with the experience having been there and knowing the whole surroundings and the environment, I felt that every time that I caught that, it stood out as very significant. There were a few times where it was so far in the distance that, you know, I kind of brushed it off a little bit, but these handful of times that it was so close, there was just no way that we weren't hearing this sound. And it didn't sound in any way created. It was very natural. And so it's a difficult thing to distinguish because you do, especially down there in the Ozarks. And where we were, you've got cows, you've got coyotes, you've got mountain lions and potentially bears, and you name it, it could be out there. And so when we're reviewing audio, when I'm reviewing the audio, we're talking fine-tooth comb. I mean, it took me weeks to review one trip. I mean, I've always got audio running, always. From the second I get to a location, I am running audio. When I get out of that car, I'm hitting record, period. Because I have kicked myself in the butt for not having something running so many times, and I won't do it again. But to review all that is a nightmare.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So when you're driving to the location and you're getting close, do you actually have a camera going on the dash? pointing
sometimes,
out.
Sometimes. The thing is, we had actually done some filming to potentially create a documentary down there. We have a lot of video kind of in the archives right now that I'm hoping eventually we can sort of put together. Circumstances kind of, I guess, veered us off of that. But, oh, yeah, we had audio, video, whatever we could do. We always had something going. But you're talking about me being an aspiring filmmaker. It's because, you know, in the perfect world, I'd love to pair my writing with a documentary style type film. Just because I like to give that aspect of it too. I do try to write in a style that I feel like I try to bring whomever the reader is kind of along with us. I catch a lot of heck for that because in some instances it tends to get a little boring because I try to explain the equipment we're using. And it's funny because specifically like when I'm doing the dialogue in the books, it can get a little repetitive and probably a little annoying because the way that we are, we're guys mostly. Every now and again, we've got the girls along with us, but my key right and left hand guys are guys. And when we get freaked out, it's SOB this and it's dude, what was that? And but I try to really keep it genuine, you know, like it's not a fictional world. We're not going to speak as though we're Shakespearean, you know? And so I truly try to keep it like dumbed down to these boneheads that are in these crazy places. And you feel like you're right there with us. And because I want it to be genuine, you know, and part of my writing has to do with a lot of mistakes that I've made because I see so many people in this field pointing at who's the expert in this and who's the expert in that. And I find that completely laughable because what exactly is an expert in the field of paranormal research? Like, you've got to be kidding me. You can't prove anything. So who's the expert exactly? I mean, someone that's been doing it for 30 years, congratulations, you've been doing it for 30 years and you still can't prove anything. That doesn't make you an expert. It makes you just as much of a failure as the person that's been doing it for a year. And so, to me, there's just a lot of words and tags that just get slapped on people just because of maybe who they are and their position. And so, I kind of steer clear of a lot of that because, to me, it's my research. It's my experience. And I try to bring that through in my writing. Whether you believe it or not, that's not my job. I'm not trying to convince anybody. That is exactly not the point of these books, is to make you a believer if you're a skeptic. I really couldn't care less what you believe in. I just hope you enjoy the story. And I want it to be genuine, and I want it to be real. And so that's how I try to present my work. And so I feel like that's just something that I hold on to very strongly. I've even been approached by certain people like in the Hollywood spectrum, and I'm just not all that interested because I don't need an editor. You know, I want this story told the way that it happens, and I don't need, well, we need more of this or we need less of this. And I just don't, it's not my aim. I want to tell people the reality. I want to tell people my experience. And if they take that with them and they believe it, great. If not, I hope you enjoyed the book, you know?
Right. At least it's a good story, hopefully.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, as an investigator, paranormal investigator, or even a supernatural investigator, or somebody out looking for Bigfoot, you know, the reality is if we ever find anything, video, photographic, audio, no, even if we believe this is what this is, other people are going to question its authenticity. It happens all the time.
Sure.
Nobody's going to fully accept anything. So I think, you know, for myself, that was kind of a defeating idea for a while. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'd get so excited about something and then somebody would just like crush me with it. You know, it's like,
mm-hmm. Right.
And I just decided, you know what, I can't, I just have to find out this stuff for myself and share what I've found. And whether you accept it or not is up to you. This is what I found. And this is what I think. And this is what I experienced. And that's it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, take it or leave it. It's okay.
Right. And there's always going to be critics. And like you said, and even if somebody documented this rock solid absolute proof that we are all out there looking for, there's going to be somebody that calls it fake. They may not have any reason. And, you know, it's funny because I appreciate skepticism. I encourage skepticism to a reasonable extent. But when you're so staunchly skeptical, then that just tells me that you're closed-minded, which is fine. If that's the way you need to be to be comfortable, then do what you got to do. We're all our own person. I'm not here to judge you. But to me also, there is an extent to where that skepticism, you know, I had it in spades. And, you know, when you do get slapped upside the face, very literally, by something you can't even see, you change your tune pretty quick. But again, it's not something that I have ever felt like I need that. I don't need that public acceptance. You know, there's always going to be a skeptic, and I get that. But in the end, it's, you know, if you do this type of work, it's just not mainstream, and it never will be. And so you just have to accept it or walk away. Exactly. And yeah, and I mean, I've been called all the names in the book, you know, crazy and everything else, but I sleep just fine, you know, well, for the most part. But to me, it's my work. And, you know, you can take it or leave it. I don't apologize for it. And I, you know, I have given nobody any reason to question my integrity. And so for me, it's just, I put myself in a lot of the stuff that I've written down. I had a really hard time writing down, especially, I mean, let alone publishing. These are very personal things that I had a very hard time with. I mean, you know, there was a physical attack in the first book that I struggled with mightily, mentally and physically. And then when I wrote it, it brought everything back, and it crippled me, and it was tough. But I wanted to relay that experience, whether it was hard, because it's not easy to say. It's a difficult thing to talk about, but I wanted to do that because, again, I want people to just understand that, you know, these things are out there, and, you know, you don't have to believe in it, but, you know, people like me have to experience that to know what we need to believe in.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. There was a couple things that you had said a lot earlier about the ley lines intersecting, and you had made mention of little people and Bigfoot at the same time. Did you have some experiences that were dealing with little people as well?
Yeah. Well, again, a lot of this was presented to us by these brothers during the walk through the property and their life experiences. They grew up there. And these types of crazy occurrences were just like everyday life, you know. They'd tell it to you like it was, oh, ho-hum, like I'd be telling you, I had Taco Bell for lunch, you know. And they're saying, oh, well, the little people came again last night. These are not nice little people. They're along the lines of what you'll hear in Ireland about, you know, leprechauns and fairies and all that sort of thing. And it's very common in the Native American culture to hear stories about little people, especially in the hills, especially down in the Ozarks, because there's a strong belief that these little people are inhabitants of the hills, and they'll live in the cave system, which are vast. The cave system down in southern Missouri and Arkansas and Oklahoma is, I mean, it's barely been explored by humans because it's so big. It's barely been touched. And so anyway, the little people, a lot of times, were notorious for coming in the night, and they were known for abuse, physical abuse, and even sexual assault, things like that. You'll hear a lot of stories about people being assaulted while they're sleeping. And, you know, for me, the closest experience that I personally had with something that I thought might have fit that description was this little shadow figure looking thing that I encountered when I was telling you about when I kept hearing my name. I kept hearing my name, and I went to walk into this room next to me where I kept hearing my name from, and it was just this 3-foot-tall little shadow that just kind of walked across the room just as nonchalantly as it could, walked in front of an open door, blacked out the light from the outside, and then blacked out the wall, and then just came right at me. And it came at me across the room that had actually collapsed when we were walking in earlier. And when it was about 2 feet away, I'd say I lost it visually. It went away visually. But, you know, and I don't know if it was a natural reaction, but I felt like I got hit by a truck of static electricity. But, you know, at that point, I had no idea what to think. But, yeah, you do. You hear the stories of the little people. That was one thing that I didn't. I felt like that was the closest thing I came to experiencing something like that down there, but the stories are very common. But that was about all that I experienced in that aspect, I think. But other people that had gone down there, we did have Bigfoot in Kansas down there. Those guys are pretty good buddies of mine, and they came down, and I think one or two of them had some experiences where they thought they saw a group of these little people in the woods that kind of formed as shadows, and they kept popping in and out of the trees. And, you know, so I wasn't there for that. I kind of went on what they had told me, but it kind of fit the description a little bit. But again, they're supposed to be really mischievous and even very physical, but I personally hadn't had a close encounter, I guess.
Are there natives local to that area that talk about them as well, or?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Well, the thing is when you're down in that type of an environment, you have to understand that a lot of information is kept very secret. You know, me, random white guy coming onto Native American property, let's be honest, you know, we're not immediate buddies. Now, luckily for me, I think I had a good connection with Gerald and Marvin down there, the two brothers that own this property. We really hit it off. And I think they could kind of catch my vibe that I didn't want anything from them. I wasn't wanting to exploit anything. You know, I was down there genuinely wanting to find answers for them, but also tie in their history. And so I think after several, you know, times going down there, because I think they just kind of figured out they'll come and go. But, you know, I kind of made them a promise that I would pursue this and I would try to tell this story no matter what I needed to do. And I think they respected that because I kind of kept up my end of the bargain. And they couldn't have been more gracious. I mean, they pretty much treated me like family the entire time. And so it wasn't like I felt like I went out of my way. I mean, I loved it. I loved being around them. They were like family to me after no time. And so over the course of time, they open up about things that maybe they wouldn't, or, you know, just to the random person. And so, you know, I feel like to an extent, I owe them a level of that privacy. But that's why I also wanted to make sure that they were approving of everything that was going to be talked about. But yeah, you'll hear stories in that culture about werewolves, and you'll hear stories in that culture about, like I said, skinwalkers and shapeshifters and Bigfoot and aliens, and it all kind of comes hand in hand. And so they're just a very spiritual people, and they're very tied closely to the land. And, you know, a lot of times our perspective makes us forget that we live in the big city. I live in Kansas City. You know, people live in New York City. Well, guess what? These cities haven't always been there. And guess what else? This land has been in existence for a heck of a long time. Not before. I mean, it's like our minds just automatically stop at America, you know? I mean, let's talk about it, like thousands and thousands of years. We could be on who knows what kind of land and who knows what could have happened. You're on battlegrounds from thousands of years ago, maybe. Who knows what kind of energy you're coming across, you know? And they're really tuned into that sort of thing, and they respect it. Whereas in our society, we need this instant gratification. We need Facebook and Twitter and everything else, and we need attention. And it's definitely always about us. Because we can't look at anything else and actually appreciate the fact that people and their views are different because, well, we all have different lives, which kind of shapes our views and our beliefs. And the thing is these people just they attune themselves with the natural forces of the land, and they appreciate it. Whereas most people, it goes right by them. And to me, it was fascinating. It was not just fascinating, but it was educational. And I took from that, and I think it made me 10 times the investigator that I was when I started, because I appreciate that. And I learned how to get in tune with my surroundings and my environment. And to me, that means the world. I mean, I can't put a price on that, you know. That's everything that I want in the work that I do.
I got to tell you something, Brandon. You know, before the show started, I told you that we had recently found this stick structure in the woods. And mm-hmm. We were up on the Indian reservation that my mom comes from. And I actually had gone into like a prayer area, a sacred prayer area before we went in. And I did like a traditional Ojibwe prayer and gave tobacco offering. And then I walked into the woods and I asked the little people there to help us to find something of Bigfoot and to keep mm-hmm. us safe along the way. Mm-hmm. And that's what we found that day. And it was lickety-split easy to do. Mm-hmm. And I have never had a bad experience with the little people. They've always been very kind and helpful to me.
You know what? I haven't either. I'm just going by what I was told.
Right.
Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, if that's what this was that I saw, it didn't hurt me.
But, right, yeah.
You know, in that particular area, you're not going to hear many positive stories. That's for sure.
I know that they can be mischievous. I know that they can be. You know, when we're doing paranormal investigations, sometimes I get called in on cases where that is the problem, that mm-hmm. there are little people who are being mischievous. And mm-hmm. I kind of go in there and I talk to them and I make peace with them and teach the people how to give offerings to them mm-hmm. and keep the peace, so to speak. And so that's actually worked quite well. But I do know that there are the kinds that don't want to co-mingle very well. I just thankfully haven't encountered many of those.
Sure.
So yeah, I did have one glare at me pretty hard one time, but but
that'll happen.
It's very, very interesting. And you know, I know to some people who hear about the little people, it's kind of like, oh yeah, that they don't, a lot of people don't believe in that. But I tell you what, you believe in it when you come into contact with it, that's for sure.
Well, that's the thing, is they were blowing our minds with just the walkthrough and the stories. And the next thing I knew, you start experiencing these things, you know. It's just not something you hear a lot about in our standard everyday culture. You just don't. 9 times out of 10, the cases I work, it's, you know, people feel like there's a ghost or they're, you know, well, most people think there's a demon, which fortunately, usually they're wrong. But, you know, they'll think there's a ghost or whatever it might be. But down there, you're opening up a can of worms that just is staggering. I mean, it's like, are you kidding me? We literally had to take a break. Like, I was like, hold on. I got to just wrap my mind around some of this. And that's the way it was. And then when you start experiencing it, and like I said, that was part of the point of such a long-term project, is it gave us the ability to experience these things over a long period of time.
We are at the end of the show, Brandon, and I hope you'll come back on again and visit with us more, because I feel like there's so much more to say. Can you tell people where to find you online?
Oh, yeah. Well, mostly I've got my author page on Facebook. You don't want my personal page. It's full of Kansas City Royals and Kansas City Chiefs. You're not going to be interested in that. But anyway, Brandon Callahan, author on Facebook. Find me, shoot me a message. I try to interact as best I can. I'll try to be on it more often moving forward, keep pretty busy. That's the main place right now. And okay. So definitely take a look for the books and check them out.
That sounds wonderful. Remember, everybody, that his book is The Agony That Remains. That's the one that he's talking about most of the show here. So check that out wherever books are sold. And hey, thank you for joining us on this journey for The Journey tonight. And please check us out on Facebook at The Journey on Radio. And check us out next week when we have Tim Weisberg from Ghost Asylum and Spooky South Coast. So join us next week also on The Journey Radio Show. Thank you so much. Thanks, Sarge and Para X. Good night.